So here we are already at lesson 10 in module 2. Today it's going to be really quite a short component, and it's just to wrap up this whole module of really looking around to seeing what is out there in the UN, and for you to become familiar with and comfortable with a lot of the basics. We've looked at the charter, we've looked at some of the elements of rules of procedure, the deliberating process, the decision-making process. We've looked at where the United Nations is in different places around the world, and we've still got actually a lot of territory to cover. But in this lesson, we're just going to go now into looking at some of the other main UN offices. Part of what we're doing here is to make distinctions between the organs and the different offices and their functions, so that gradually, and it won't all happen at once, gradually you can get to know, well, at least that you've got a place to come back to get more clear when a certain situation arises and you realize that you're a little confused about what department or organ or part of the UN is something really connected to. You can come back to this area of your studies and really gain clarity. I tell you, I still have to come back to the organizational diagrams, and I know the diplomats do too. So don't feel bad if you're still confused. Just live with it for a while. It's okay, because there's just so much information coming at you at this stage. But just allow it to wash over you, and in time you'll discover that it starts to take shape and you'll begin to see the picture, a better picture of what the UN is. So anyway, let's get back to work. In this segment, we are looking at the UN offices. So you remember this chart, and you'll have seen, we've already gone over a number of these components, but here I want to draw your attention to a couple of different places, and they are the UN offices at Geneva, Vienna, and Nairobi. And as you saw, these are all underneath the UN Secretariat. And so that distinguishes these UN offices from the regional commissions of ECOSOC, for example. So in Geneva, we have the UN offices, and there is also a regional commission of ECOSOC. So here we are in Geneva, and clearly spring or summer, and there's the website address for you to go and look around a little bit more. But the United Nations system in Geneva includes a large number of intergovernmental organizations, and as noted in the last lesson, there are specialized agencies, there are programs, there are UN funds, and there's offices associated with many of these, as well as research institutes and other related organizations and mechanisms to support all of this work. Now, two-thirds of the activities of the United Nations system as a whole take place in Geneva. Not necessarily of the headquarters, but of the United Nations system as a whole, which makes it a key center of international cooperation and multilateral negotiations. And this is one of the reasons that the city is often referred to as a very international Geneva. Now, around 8,500 staff work for the United Nations family in Geneva alone, which is the largest concentration of United Nations personnel in the world. They're active in many of the major fields of work of the United Nations, including health, labor, intellectual property, human rights, humanitarian action and disaster relief, economic trade and development activities, disarmament efforts, science and technology, as well as research and training. Before we move on to look at the UN office in Vienna, there's just a little bit of interesting history in Geneva. Now, here you can see the United Nations Office of the High Commissioner of Human Rights, and human rights is a major area of focus for the UN in Geneva. But back as far as the 16th of January 1920, when the League of Nations was inaugurated, its secretariat was based in Geneva. And in 1936, it moved to the newly built Palais des Nations. The design of the Palais was a result of an architectural competition, and the parameters of that competition were given as, quote, "It should be designed in such a way as to allow these organs to work, to preside, and to hold discussions independently and easily in the calm atmosphere which should prevail when dealing with problems of an international dimension." So they were the parameters given for the architectural competition. And that was finally completed. The Palais was finally completed in 1936 when the League of Nations moved in there. Now, after the dissolution of the League of Nations in 1946, all of its assets went to the United Nations organization, and the European offices of the United Nations was then established in the Palais, and that formally became so in 1966. So the Palais stands in 45 hectares of a park among majestic trees, and some of which are, or many of which are, actually over 100 years old. And the city of Geneva has made the park available to the UN for its offices for as long as the United Nations exist. So that's just a little history of the Geneva UN offices. Before we head on over to Vienna, we're just going to peek into a couple of the meeting rooms in Geneva. Here you have a high-level meeting on issues of migration in Geneva, and you can see some of the architecture and the art there. And all conference rooms have this feature: translators' booths. All formal sessions are translated into the six UN languages, and they are Arabic, Chinese, English, French, Russian, and Spanish. So moving on to Vienna. The UN office in Vienna, relatively speaking, compared to New York and Geneva, is quite small and even more focused than the others. In Vienna, you've got a focus on the United Nations program on the peaceful uses of outer space and the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. So that the Director General of the UN Office is also the Executive Director of the UNODC, the UN Office of Drugs and Crime. And most recently, just as of July, I think it is, in 2010, Mr. Yuri Fedotov from the Russian Federation is now the Director General of UNOV and UNODC. Then we go to the UN office, which is the newest one, the UN office in Nairobi. Now, in Nairobi, the headquarters, you can find the information, you can go to the site and see more of what's there. The office there has the office of the Director General of the UN office there and the United Nations Information Center. And we'll go over UNICs, more information on UNICs a little bit later on. Of course, they've got Division of Conference Services in all of the UN locations. There's always got to be conference services to manage and oversee and support all of the meetings of the diplomats and heads of state who come to these meetings. But the two main other agencies that are there and headquartered there in Nairobi are UNEP, or the UN Environment Programme, and UN Habitat. They, of course, have divisions of administrative services that handle the day-to-day administration and things like that, as well as the various common services for the wider UN family in Kenya. Just a little bit about UNEP, and then on to UN Habitat. The mission for UNEP is to provide leadership and encourage partnership in caring for the environment by inspiring, informing, and enabling nations and peoples to improve their quality of life without compromising that of future generations. So the focus of their mission is to combine and to integrate in an appropriate and highest way possible concerns for the environment and for development and for human welfare. They deal primarily with climate change, disasters and conflicts, environmental governance, ecosystem management, harmful substances and hazardous waste, and resource efficiency. Because this is a relatively short lesson, I just thought I'd drop in here a quick 2-minute video from UNEP. Not for any grandiose reason other than just to give you a glimpse at one of the programs in Nairobi that is overseen by the General Assembly. It's an example of the many programs and funds that the General Assembly does oversee. And just thought I'd give you a couple of minutes to look at this. And then we'll get back to UN Habitat. Now, UN Habitat deals with, as you can see by its tagline, for a better urban future. And a lot of this is focused on urban life, life in the cities. And the mission of UN Habitat is, as the Human Settlements Program, is mandated by the United Nations General Assembly to promote socially and environmentally sustainable towns and cities with the goal of providing adequate shelter for all. So that was a very quick look at the UN offices in Geneva, Vienna, and Nairobi. Today's homework: go back to each of the UN office homepages and take 5 minutes to look around, to give yourself a little bit more information, just so that you're a little bit more familiar. It's background information. You don't have to know and remember all of this. Now, allow me to raise one simple point here. What is important in many cases when you work at the United Nations is that you've got the broad brushstrokes of background information so that when you need it, you know where to go and look for the specifics. If you don't even know where to go to look for the specifics, then you're stonewalled. Today, there is so much information available that in the end, value no longer remains in the information itself, as it once did when information was more scarce. Today, with the abundance of information, value is shifting to the management of information and how it is used. So, by you learning how to use this information about the United Nations, how to access it, where it is, and then adding that to to your own understanding of how human relationships work, the processes of whether it be organizations and individuals, your own experiences and your own insights, then all of this together comprises your growing knowledge, in this case, of the United Nations and the world level relations. But here the main point is just having information is not adequate today. A large part of what we're endeavoring to deal with here through this training is, number one, knowing where the information is, but number two, knowing how to use it. That becomes an important factor that gets integrated into all of this training as we go through. So another way for you to look at the advocacy algorithm is as a knowledge management system for you in relation to the United Nations. This advocacy algorithm training area becomes one of your libraries and easily accessible information portals. You can always come back to the dashboard, which will be like your table of contents for the training, and you'll be able to go into and look at specifically the lesson that deals with the topic that you're looking for. And in that lesson, there'll always be the links and connections and review of the topic that you are needing. This will shorten your discovery time, your learning time, review time, your getting up to speed time when you're ready to do the work at the United Nations, or if you are dealing with some other international level or project. Just one more secret piece of information here. Many countries send some of their key people to the United Nations to get trained in multilateral relations and global level thinking, because often they want those people to come back to their country with this base of knowledge and experience, because it is so useful in the future for them to be effective at the international level for their nation. And so that can be true for many NGOs. I fully believe that NGO representatives who have had an opportunity to serve at the global level at the United Nations, when they go back to work for their NGO, they are far better placed to strategically think about how their NGO can be better structured and organized in order to work more effectively at the global level, if in fact that is an intention of the organization. But back to our homework, and sorry so much for a really short lesson. I ended up just adding in these additional perspectives on this training now that we've made it all the way through to the end of Module 1. So back to the homework, and to the UN office in Geneva's website in particular. Go in and find one agency that interests you and explore its website again, just to broaden your own understanding of the scope of work that is being done by the United Nations and its families. Get to know and feel comfortable with finding your way around the websites, getting used to the terminology, getting more familiar with where the specific information is, the areas of concern, and where they are even geographically located. And this will help you feel more at home as you deal with the United Nations. Have a wonderful time, and I look forward to seeing you in Module 2.